Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Welcome back, everybody. Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 77, the Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. I'm your host, Greg Giamborisi. Hook, Line, and Splitter is presented by Judd Shaw Injury Law. We understand the toll injuries take on families, and we're here to help. For a free consultation, call 1-866-909-6894. Or visit JuddShawInjuryLaw.com. That's Judd with two D's, ShawInjuryLaw.com. Our guest today, Blue Claws left-handed pitcher Andrew Walling, 23-year-old southpaw from Mississippi State. Grew up in the Pacific Northwest, Longview, Washington. Went to Oregon State, then Eastern Oklahoma State Junior College, and then Mississippi State. Played in the draft league with the Williamsport Crosscutters last year, which is kind of a cool subplot to his story because, obviously, for many years, Williamsport sent players to the Blue Claws when they were the Phillies' short-season affiliate, and Jersey Shore, then Lakewood, was the Phillies' low-A affiliate. And, you know, it seemed like that era was over, but we get another member of the Crosscutters to come to the Blue Claws. Well, he's been outstanding with Jersey Shore. He struck out 20 of the 39 batters that he's faced. This is through games on August 24th. He's allowed just three earned runs in 11 and a third innings, two wins and two saves. And we talked to him about his role with the team, his background from Washington and Mississippi State to the draft league. I think you're going to find that part of it especially interesting. So without further ado, here's Blue Claws left-handed pitcher Andrew Walling on the latest edition of Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. We're joined by Blue Claws left-handed pitcher Andrew Walling, Blue Claws in Wilmington, Delaware for the week. We're taping this on Wednesday the 23rd, and they were 10-3 winners last night. Andrew, you guys are playing really well right now. I think it's 22-6 in your last 28 games. How's the vibe been around the team?
Guys are having a lot of fun. It's a good group of guys that everyone's enjoying the way that we're playing. Obviously, winning's a lot of fun, but the guys are going out there knowing that we're just going to play the game. Go out there, have a good time, do what you need to do, and usually it ends up rolling our way. It's kind of how it's been lately.
Not that long after you guys finished up the win last night, Brooklyn gave up five runs in the ninth inning and lost to Asheville. How much have you been – so you guys are one game up. How much have you been following that kind of on a day-to-day? I know you just – really, you just want to go play yourself, but how much have you at least kept an eye on it?
I think it's in the back of everyone's mind, but less so than you'd think. It's not something that we're hyper-focused on. We're more worried about ourselves. So I think that's going to be a big thing going down the stretch.
I mean, when you play every day, 3 weeks, which is what you have left in the season, that's a lot of there's a lot that's going to happen here over the next 3 weeks. You can't ride the wave day to day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, you got here a couple of weeks ago from Clearwater. Now you have a lot of your Threshers teammates up here with you. What made that group so special down there?
I think it started with Marty Malloy, the manager, just instilling the culture and really letting us know what it's all about at this type of level and what guys are kind of looking for and how to go out there and have the most success possible and set yourself up for it. He does a really good job of building guys and instilling that team culture that I think sometimes can get lost in professional baseball, honestly.
All right, so we'll come back to that as we go, but I want to talk about your baseball journey, which continued last summer. You played in Williamsport in the MLB Draft League and then ended up signing with the Phillies around the 1st of August last summer. What was that whole Draft League experience like? I guess the year you played in it, 2022, it was only in its second season. What was that whole experience like for you?
The Draft League was a great experience. I was super super fortunate to have that opportunity to go out there and play. Met a bunch of great people. The manager is actually still managing, Jesse Litch. He was a huge help all summer. It was a great opportunity to be able to go play for a guy that had formerly played in the major leagues and kind of had an understanding of what it takes to at least get your foot in the door of affiliated baseball. And then going from there, it just allowed me to get that exposure that I really needed there at the end of the year.
Did you seek out the draft league? Did they come to you? How did you end up there?
I seeked out the draft league actually, using my coaches at Mississippi State. They got me in contact with the league and they were helpful there. And then I kind of got the ball rolling with myself and was allowed to show up and get a chance. And then I got to stick around. So that was really cool.
So, I know we talked about this the other day, but would you be here with the Blue Claws if not for the draft league?
I don't think so. I think that allowed me to show that there's still a reason to take a shot on me. And it allowed me to just kind of go have fun again. And I was super grateful for that.
Because, you know, they had cut the draft itself. It used to be like 50 plus rounds. Then it went to 50, then it was 40 for many years, but now it's only 20. So there are a lot of quality players that, you know, would move up high in systems and some would make it to the big leagues that are no longer getting drafted. And, you know, those opportunities that you might get in, say, the Gulf Coast League or low A, you'd have to get because you were drafted, you now have to, you know, work a little harder and to get yourself signed. And it provides a great opportunity for a lot of guys.
Yeah, I think it does. It's a big, obviously the game's changing when they change that draft and everything. So it's guys finding new ways to be able to get eyes on and someone to give them opportunity. So I think the draft league has been a huge help for that for plenty of guys. I think they had even more guys get into affiliated baseball this year out of the draft league. So it's been a really successful thing in my opinion.
What were your expectations going in? Like, I know they share data, your data with you guys. Do they share it with the, and obviously they definitely share it with the parent organizations, but it's, you know, it's still a relatively new experience. What were your kind of expectations going in?
Yeah, I had no real expectation in the sense of how it should be exactly run or things along those lines. I was really just looking for an opportunity and a place to play baseball, but it didn't differ super or a whole lot from a lot of college baseball leagues outside of the fact where they have that data that they can share and give people more concrete evidence of, hey, this is how this guy's doing. And it's a lot easier for those professional teams to scout you. And I think a lot of the coaches as well, because we had that guy who'd played, Jesse, who'd played in the bigs, they have that network. And that is something that was super helpful as well, is these guys, you can go ask any sort of question and they usually have an answer, or they can lead you to someone that will give you an answer.
So where did the Phillies come in? Did you know they were scouting you, or did you just kind of get a call out of the blue one day?
I had no idea. I kind of got a call out of the blue one day. The area scout who had his eye on me when I was at Mississippi State, he interviewed me in the fall previously. So I had some rapport with him. I had that conversation with him, that pre-draft or that interview that previous year. And he called me up that summer after the draft league, and kind of the rest is history. But no, I wasn't expecting that at all. It was kind of out of the blue.
How was the integration into the Phillies' way of doing things and you know, the system you signed last year? You got a couple of games in late last summer and then into the early part of the fall. How did the Phillies kind of weave you into the organization?
Yeah, it was pretty seamless. We showed up for at post draft, showed up for that first little mini camp. They got our feet wet a little bit, understood the complex, understood the Philly way, protecting the standard. And then they sent us and we started playing. But it wasn't that year, it was more when we first showed up, it was more about getting your feet wet, go play. Here's professional baseball, here's your first taste. And then this past season, spring training, first full season, has been pretty seamless as well. I'm very grateful to be a part of this organization. I think it's helped me improve a lot, and there's a lot of great personnel that they surround us with.
What have you been working on, you know, with the guys in Clearwater, Travis Hergert, and now up here with Phil and Brady? You know, how have they, the Phillies staff, made you a better pitcher from August 1st of last year to, you know, now here we are 55 weeks later?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that we've done is adding my slider. I've always thrown either a gyro slide or a cut slide. And then this year I added a sweeper going right out of spring training, and that has been probably my best pitch this year. allowed me to get a lot of strikeouts, have a lot of success. So I think that is probably the biggest thing that the guys in the organization have kind of come to me and they're like, hey, like, you want to try this out? And obviously they see something. So I'm going to give it a shot. And it's been really successful since. So that's been a really cool opportunity to be able to go out and show that that's going to be working for me.
What's the, describe your gyro slider.
So that's, I would say that's kind of the middleman between my fastball and my sweeping slider. Mm-hmm. And usually it's a cutter. Like I'm throwing a cutter. So it's just that cut fastball, just probably 89 to 91 going here. Something to either miss a barrel or just keep attacking hitters with and be able to have that in between. So it's not just fastball slider.
Which of the two sliders is more effective against righties? Because obviously you're a lefty, but you're going to face more righties.
Yeah, that varies to depending on the right-handed hitter. It really does. Because some guys are going to be more out over the plate. Some guys are going to be looking to pull an inside pitch. So based on how they're trying to approach that at bat is which one I usually go with.
And then how often, what's the split? How often do you throw one versus the other? Or it just depends on the day?
It does depend on the day, but it's a pretty, I like to mix pretty evenly. That's what I've noticed this year is if I get either too cutter heavy or too slider or too fastball, vice versa, that's when it's a little less success. And then when I'm able to mix freely, it's a pretty smooth sailing ship.
And you throw hard. I mean, you know, have you always been a really hard thrower? I mean, I think you're up to been 97, 98. And there aren't too many lefties that can get to get that high up.
I've always had the ability to throw pretty hard. Yeah. It started about my junior year of high school prior to getting Tommy John surgery, and then had Tommy John surgery, worked my way back and worked a lot with the training facilities I have at home post Tommy John to get that velocity back. And it's just, I've been able to maintain it and be healthy since. So super happy with that.
So you had it what in high school?
Tommy John? Yeah, I had it my junior summer of high school. So missed my whole senior year.
Yeah, and then ended up at Oregon State and then junior college in Oklahoma and then at Mississippi State. So what were those different experiences like?
Yeah, each spot was a good experience, taught me something new. One of my favorites was Eastern, obviously. That was a really fun year. Getting to play with McGowan, that's a pretty cool experience as well. He's here again, so it's like we can't get away from each other. So that's been a cool experience. And then Mississippi State obviously was the town was so accepting of the guys, and we had such a huge supportive fan base. So that made every opportunity to go out there in front of those people really fun.
It's a lot different than the Pacific Northwest, right?
Super different, absolutely. It could not be more different.
What'd you like most about the SEC experience in down there in Starkville?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think it's just the kind people. So many people are just genuinely kind, and it's a really easy thing to just go out and have a conversation with a stranger, and it's feel like you really gain something from it. So I think that's one of the biggest pieces, and so many of my teammates were like that as well. It's really hard to, I feel like it's really hard to find that in some places. So
who were some of the guys you played against, the tougher hitters that you faced, be it at anywhere in college, I guess, but I know most recently, obviously in the SEC.
Yeah. Anywhere in college, obviously the toughest one is Adley Rutschman. Thrown against him in inner squads. And even then he is even better now. So
yeah. How many years did you overlap?
Just the one. He was just there my first year. Yeah, that was his draft year. So it was definitely him that year.
We had Mick Abel on here last year when he was with the Blue Claws, and I had asked him the same thing. And it was right around the time it was right, and Mick was going to go there, and obviously got drafted, and signed. But he had trained with Adley Rutschman in the off season, and they were good friends. And Rutschman was rehabbing with Aberdeen last spring, and Mick pitched against him, and Rutschman got him at least once for like a, he smoked a double at like 107 or something, and maybe twice. And I talked to Mick about it. He's like, yeah, I faced him enough. He just knows me too well. And he kind of had to laugh about it. But, it happens. He's a great player, obviously. So,
of course.
What about in the SEC?
The SEC, the toughest hitter I probably threw against was the Tennessee? Not Drew Gilbert. I didn't get to throw against him. Their other outfielder.
Did you face Cruz from LSU?
No, we didn't. We didn't get to face him.
How did that grind there in the SEC or in the Pac-12? How does that help prepare you for professional baseball?
I think it allows you to have an understanding of how big the game can get, and it allows you to slow it down for yourself. Having those opportunities to throw in front of those giant crowds forces you to slow it down. If you let that speed up on you, you're done for.
I think
my time at Mississippi State forced me to learn really how to control things and slow things down for myself. So I'm able to compete every time I go out there, and it's not something that can get too out of control.
I don't think people up here in the Northeast appreciate how big college baseball is in the South. Yeah. You know, college football, mm-hmm. college basketball, whatever, but because it's on TV all the time. But I don't think people appreciate how big college baseball is in the South. It's huge.
It's massive. It's such a fun time.
So fast forward now to to 2023, you're with Clearwater. They have a great year and are having a great year. You got promoted up here. How'd you find out you were getting to come up to Jersey?
Yeah, I was just getting done with brunch with a couple of the guys in Clearwater. We were driving back to the apartment complex, and I got a call from our manager, Marty. And he just called me and said, you're going up, man. Like, congratulations. We'll get you the flight information, but you need to go home and start packing up. You're probably going to head out tomorrow. Congrats. Keep doing your thing. And it was I wish I would have gotten to hear it from him in person, just because it would have been nice to shake his hand and thank him in person. But it was still pretty cool to get that call and then scramble home and go pack and wait for when my flight is.
Back to the podcast in a second. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963, 732-370-5963, or richgreenlawns.com. And when shopping for appliances, electronics, and mattresses, you want a local hometown team that you can trust. That's PC Richard & Son. PC Richard & Son is a friendly and knowledgeable sales team, installations and repair service you can trust, and the guaranteed lowest prices. So get to PC Richard & Son today. Shop smart. Shop local. Shop PC Richard & Son. Marty's a great guy. He managed here in 2017 and 2018, and we were low A at the time. And he's really the perfect manager for players at that level because – he's really tough and he's intense, but he obviously cares deeply about the players. The players all love him, but he's the perfect guy to kind of instill that the right way of doing things to younger guy. I know you were, college guy, so a little different, but a lot of younger guys that are just getting their first taste. All the players are really getting some of their first taste of professional baseball and their first taste of full season baseball. I mean, it's funny because every time a guy comes up here, I always ask him how Marty's doing, and they always have like this big ear to ear grin. They all obviously love him and obviously played really hard for him.
Yeah, it's really easy to play hard for him. I think, like you said, he really cares about his guys, so it makes it easy to want to go run through a wall for the guy.
Up here, you have Brady and you have Phil, and obviously kind of opposite backgrounds. Phil's been a coach for many years, and stopped playing, 30 plus years ago. Brady played last year. How do those two guys work together with you guys and provide, different sounding boards and different coaching styles just based on the differences in their background?
Yeah, I think they complement each other perfectly. It's a really good thing to have both Phil and Brady because you can pick Phil's brain, obviously, about all the things he's done coaching wise, and he's a great resource for that because he's been able to do it for so long. He has a good understanding of the intricacies of the pitching and all those types of things. So he can always give you those answers. And then with Brady, you can pick his brain about, okay, what's kind of the thing to expect when I go to this level? Or, hey, what happened when you encounter this guy? Or what have you picked up from these types of things? And you can kind of pick his brain more on the moving up side or the what can I do to grow as a player, less so on the mound and more so being able to kind of get that mental thing going because you recently went through all this. And so you have a good understanding of what's to expect down the road and how we can prepare properly. And obviously Brady's super insightful in the pitching side too, because he did it at a high level.
Yeah.
I think he's been a great resource for us the whole time, him and Phil both.
Yeah. It's the first time the Phillies have had two pitching coaches here. And I think it's worked out. I mean, the proof's in the pudding, you know, you guys are all having really good years. So I think it's a move you'll probably see with them moving forward. But that's just an inclination based on how well it's gone so far this year. So, all right. Pacific Northwest growing up. Were you a big Mariners fan? Who's some of your favorite guys to watch?
Yeah. Big Mariners fan. I was like watching Kyle Seager, obviously. Longtime Mariner third baseman. Growing up, another favorite of mine was Hisashi Iwakuma.
Okay.
Yeah. Random names. I just always liked the way that he went out and competed. And he was always just one of the guys that was kind of a staple in the rotation for a while. Obviously, King Felix.
Yep.
I think my favorite,
his number.
Did I see that? So.
Yeah. Or he went on the Ring of Honor like a week and a half ago. So,
yeah.
Well deserved.
I think my favorite acquisition, though, they had him for like 2 years. It was kind of a rental, was when they got Cliff Lee, though. So it's like, oh, sweet left-handed starter. So I would watch pretty much all of his outings when I got the chance when he was with the Mariners.
Yeah, I remember when the Phillies got him, they traded one of our Blue Claws players, and his name was Jason Knapp. It was in the deadline of 2009, and we were in Greenville, and they traded three AAA players and Knapp for Cliff Lee. And Knapp found out at the mall. It was like walking through the mall and saw it on the ticker or whatever on ESPN that he got traded. So then we go pick him up with the bus, and he walks on the bus, and everybody's like, oh, you know, going to good luck, yada, yada, yada. And I have ESPN on the TV on the bus, and Jason Starr comes on and says, the only reason why the Indians are making this trade is because that they're including Jason Knapp. And everybody turned at him and goes, oh, good luck. And then Cliff Lee was obviously fantastic for the Phillies and pissed a shutout in the first game of the World Series that year too. So yeah, Cliff Lee, great, obviously an all-timer. So how'd you end up at Oregon State? I know obviously Pacific Northwest, and they're one of the top programs in the country. They've won national titles. Was that an easy choice for you coming out?
Yeah, they came down to my last decisions. And I think really what helped me make the decision was Pat Casey. Unfortunately, he retired my freshman year after they won that World Series the year prior. So I never got to play for him. But I kind of knew what I was expecting for when I played for him. And that was probably the biggest draw for me, is he reminds me, obviously he's got to be a little more or not necessarily a little more intense, but he's got to be a different coach in the college atmosphere.
Sure.
But it reminds me of a guy like Marty, someone who really cares for their team, understands how to make better people out of them, not just better baseball players, and understands that if he builds that culture, the winning is just kind of an after effect. It's the side effect. It's not necessarily the root cause.
I don't know if Marty would like recruiting. He probably wouldn't, but I feel like he'd be really good at it. You get him in a living room with, I feel like you get Marty in a living room with a player and his parents, like the parents are going to say, you're going to go play for that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it'd be a tough decision for a mom and dad after he gave his speech about what he does for his players.
And what the players talk about, what he does for them too, after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So I know nowadays everybody has access to all this information. You talked about adding a new sweeper this year. Are you kind of an analytical guy? Like, do you go back and look at, you know, spin rates and horizontal movements or vertical movements of your pitches after each outing, or are you kind of more, I guess Travis Hergert described it, you know, art of pitching versus science of pitching?
Yeah, I think this year I've been pretty in the middle, not getting too consumed with the number side, don't get too consumed with the art form side. And especially as a reliever, I think if you start to dive down that hole, especially on the analytics side, because we throw 2-3 times a week, there's bound to be days or sometimes two that your stuff's a tick down. It's not quite the same. It's not quite sweeping as much. It's not riding as much. So as a reliever, I think it's less so about the how good the metrics are, but how consistent they are. And that's, I think, what I've tried to pay more attention to, is being able to be consistent every single time I go out there, staying healthy, and then understanding that this is my routine. This is what's been having good results. This is what makes me feel good. All right, let's go do it. Let's go attack hitters. And it's been really simple this year, and I've had a lot of success doing it.
You had 5 saves with Clearwater. You got 2 here. Do you like closing?
I enjoy it. Yeah, absolutely. I think I like throwing in big innings. It's a really fun experience. I feel like anywhere from the 7th on in a pretty close game is about the same type of competition or feeling whenever you go in. If you're in those late innings, it feels like a close, even if it's not necessarily the 9th, because your job is still to go out there, get 3 outs, put up a 0.
Left-handed hitters this year, I don't know if you know this, against you are 5 for 55 with 25 strikeouts between here and Clearwater. What do you think makes your stuff play so tough against lefties?
I think it's a combination of I throw from a bit of a weird angle, especially to a lefty. And, I mean, to righties as well, but they have a little better opportunity. It's not coming at them and going across them. So I think that's been the biggest thing, is being able to have that deceptive angle and then just trying to make the at-bat as uncomfortable as possible.
Have you always thrown from that angle?
Yeah, I've always been pretty over the top.
I feel like you hide the ball pretty well, too. I mean, they're batted against you, but just from upstairs, it looks like you kind of hide it, because it comes from back, you know, pretty far, and like it does, it's not really produced into the eye of the hitter until it seems like a little later than normal. Mm-hmm. That's just my observation from upstairs.
Yeah, and very well could be. I'm not sure about any of that stuff. I haven't had the opportunity to discuss with opposing teams.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, I don't want to keep you all day here. I know you got a game tonight. Keep up the great work. This was a lot of fun. All the best, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Anytime.
Thanks to Blue Claws reliever Andrew Walling for joining us on our latest episode of Hook, Line, and Splitter at Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Blue Claws in a playoff push going into the action on August the 25th. There are just 15 games left in the season, and the Blue Claws are all tied up with the Brooklyn Cyclones. If they end up tied, Jersey Shore will win the tiebreaker by virtue of winning the season, the second half series 7-5 from Brooklyn. And they can thank, they earned that with 3 huge wins, August 4th, 5th, and 6th over Brooklyn at Shoretown Ballpark, after Jersey Shore had dropped the first two of the first 3 in that series from the Cyclones. That began on August the 1st. They were 6 out going into that Friday night game on August 4th. They won that one. They won August 5th, and they won August 6th. They get the 3 out. They've been as much as 1 game up first place for the first time since 2018, when they made the playoffs and lost to Lexington in the championship series and trying to get back. Baseball fans, introducing Bally Live, the only app where minor league baseball fans can score major rewards. When you stream your favorite teams live, you'll score rewards. When you chat with friends during a watch party, you'll score rewards. And when you test your skills at trivia, you'll score rewards. Being a fan of the minor leagues has never been so rewarding. What are you waiting for? Download Bally Live for free from the app or Play Store and start scoring rewards today. Blue Claws home next week. They'll welcome in the Aberdeen Ironbirds, the Orioles affiliate, for the final 6 home games of the 2023 regular season. But obviously, hopefully, there will be postseason baseball to follow after that. Blue Claws will finish the regular season at Hudson Valley. That ends on September the 10th. And if the Blue Claws do make the postseason, their first home game will be, and their only home game in the first round, will be on Tuesday, September the 12th at against Hudson Valley, who won the Northern Division first half title. So the rundown for the last week, a couple of really good deals going on right now as part of Fan Appreciation Week, that final homestand. There's a special Blue Claws bundle ticket package Tuesday, Wednesday. You get a game ticket for either game of your choosing. You get a game ticket, you get a hot dog, chips, and a soda for just $10. So it's really a steal. That's valid again Tuesday and Wednesday at Shoretown Ballpark, Blue Claws, and Aberdeen. Thursday's the last Thursday. Thursday, Friday's the last fireworks, September the 1st. And then Saturday night is Fan Appreciation Night at the ballpark. There's a lot going on there. The first 500 fans get a Blue Claws mystery giveaway item. There's a scratch-off ticket giveaway from the New Jersey Lottery for the first 1,000 fans, 18 and older. Fan Appreciation Picnic, which you have to book by August 31st. But for $35, you get a two-hour all-you-can-eat buffet at the September 2nd game, a Blue Claws hat, and a game ticket for opening night 2024. There'll be special offers for prizes and value in the boardwalk, food and drink specials, Claws Cove as well. And then the Heavy Real Brewing Company Saturday special is Blue Strike, the new Blue Claws Lemonade Blueberry Sour, $7, available at the Heavy Real Brewing Tap House on the concourse behind Section 109. And then lastly, it's also Chick-fil-A Home Run Week. The Blue Claws hit a home run in any game over the last homestand, August 29th through September 3rd. Every fan in attendance receives a Chick-fil-A sandwich voucher. And then finally, Sunday the 3rd, the final game of the regular season in Shoretown, and we'll take our annual post-game fan photo on the field. You'll definitely want to be there for that. So a lot going on coming up over the next week. Get your tickets at blueclaws.com. The last homestand of 2023 is one you will not want to miss. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Thanks to our special guest, Andrew Walling, today on Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 77. We're going to have another one coming up that'll drop before that homestand as well. So we got a lot going on here. Be sure to like, rate, review, subscribe. And thank you so much for being loyal listeners here. We do appreciate it very much. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Thanks for listening to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast.